Why wouldn't need to equalize? I think we got it. I just have to compress the ever-loving tit out of it. Is that working? Yes. Let me see. Hold on. Let me fucking yell. And there we go. Yeah, now that's some quality goddamn audio. I can really... Oh, good. Now I can really fucking scream about Star Wars, a solo movie. Solo's a Star Wars movie. Fuckface, a bad idea movie. Who the fuck names a movie like that?
We're not there yet, Mike.
I know we're not.
But you have to save your energy. Another episode of Jabber on the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me, as usual, is my regular co-host, Keith Foster from San Diego, California.
Yo.
Is that it?
I guess I have to... I was waiting for you to introduce our guest, but I guess I have to introduce you before that. So, yes. With me is my co-host, Cassidy Robinson from Los Angeles, California.
And with us is a friend of the podcast, reoccurring guest, Mike Fallick from Boston?
Boston now, yeah. Boston. Sure, okay. Sure, totally.
Yeah. We had you on, I think, last year, sometime in the fall. And we were eventually going to have you back to talk about The Force Awakens, or not The Force Awakens, whatever the last one was, The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
Last one, Michael, to see.
It was prophetic, that title.
If anyone, also, I think we might reference a few times, me and Mike had this epic tweet war about the
Twitter
last
war we had, people have said to me, Keith, was more entertaining than the movie.
That has so been confirmed don't look that up. Me,
but everyone else in the world.
I had a lot of fun until... At some point, Cassidy privately messaged me because he was added in that whole conversation and he was just like, Jesus, you've got to stop engaging with Mike. You've got to let this conversation die. Because it went for like a day and a half or some
it
shit.
It was a long time. Yeah.
It was much longer than a day
was
and
it?
A half. Yeah, it was. And it was like we both clearly were not doing our work anymore. You know, people are like, what do people do? They're on their phones all day at work. It's like, yeah, this was one of those instances in which I was 100% on my phone all day at work.
Yes, they could reference those timestamps if they needed a case to fire me at my job.
So, Mike, before we get into the stuff, all of the stuff, which I should say today, me and Keith are going to be reviewing Solo, a Star Wars story at the end of the show for the Netflix homework.
No, that's not the name of it.
It is the name of
No, that's not the name of a movie. That's surely the name of a way George Lucas remembered it on his computer. Surely that's not the name of a movie that was in theaters.
Solo, : A Star Wars Story. And at the end of the program, we will be reviewing Train to Busan, which everybody saw.
Yeah.
But Mike, I do want to give you the floor to introduce the podcast that you do that we promote at the end of our show. Hack Thought, tell us what's that about?
Thoughts you don't think to think about. They're those thoughts that, you know, you figured would fit into your front door, but then you had to get the thought disassembled and a professional to come in to rebuild the thought later. It's a show all about just things that reach the blind spot of your thinking. That's all it is. Is most of the time on the show, I very much now get off on people enjoying the concept of our things that we come up, even if they can't come up with great concepts, because they're often baffling. We're now getting very good at finding thoughts that are just very confusing and in the blind spot. And it's taken a lot of time to get to this. If you look at the show, it's gone through many names and even concepts. But when you actually look at the whole thing now under Hack Thought, the whole thing fits. It's this whole epic of understanding hive minds and social media and any social gathering. It's really come together. I'm very proud of the fact that it's transformed.
And, And this has nothing to do with the podcast that I pointed out to you on Twitter that is something start a cult.
I have been saying for months now, since we changed the first name, and since we've actually made the show, because it was originally Go to Hell, and then it was Let's Start a Cult, I had been, since the beginning of the show, saying our name was too generic. But every time I would choose a new generic name, I would do a search and say, okay, nobody has a name like this. So it's great. We're showing up. We would show up first. And in the first weeks of having new names, we would. But I'm actually quite good at being ahead of trends. And sometimes that's good for me. And sometimes it's very bad for me. What's bad for me is after Let's Start a Cult was how I wanted to avoid Let's Make a Cult, which was my original name. And I thought it was supposed to be a Let's Make a Deal pun. But I've had problems with pun names in the past. So Let's Start a Cult. There was actually only one other podcast called Let's Start A. That ended pretty much 2 weeks after I changed that name as well.
let's get a sample of what your show is. So if listeners like what they're hearing here, they should check out future episodes of Hack Thought to hear the rest of our survey.
Recently on Hack Thought, I've been trying to, what we used to do is sort of one bite things. And one of the things that should we rename Blowjob as we've done on this program before, hats and doors, all those great things. But we're sort of starting to get into deeper versions of this stuff. And our most recent one is really complicated. And in fact, I know these questions are good because the question almost transforms every time we ask someone.
So that brings me to back to something we were discussing on Twitter. Part of the reason that I wanted to have you on the show was your last episode. You talked about how you hate walking. You would never walk. And you brought up this idea that we should only do. And I'm sure I'm misquoting you. And I'm sure but it was. The idea came up to me that we should value comfort almost above all else. And I say, and my hack thought I pose to you is, do you? I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. I don't know how much prep you usually do for your show.
Do you want to know? Zero. I, as a rule, never prepare for the show.
Sure. So basically, my question is, do you think that too much comfort is a bad thing?
Never. 100% no. I can say that with definitiveness. I would never say that.
Don't think that people can be too comfortable?
Absolutely not. As long as they're healthy, there's no reason to say that.
Okay. As long as they're healthy.
Well, of course. That is.
But if they value comfort above their own health, which means...
You speak of gluttony and sloth. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying definitively.
You are literally ranting and raving about how much you hate walking.
And I love exercising. We allude to it on the show, but I am a bit of an exercise nut. However, I believe that exercise is something I do to be healthy in the same way I void my bowels as well. However, if I had to void my bowels never and I was still healthy, I wouldn't want to do it because it's sort of literally and figuratively a pain in the ass because there's no real reason to have to do it.
That's why I call bullshit. That's right. You've never once enjoyed a bowel movement.
I have, due to the increasing pressure of how uncomfortable that bowel movement was, but without coming out of me.
But the actual act of the bowel movement.
The only reason I would enjoy it is, the point here is that all things that may, you know, obviously, we follow the Hippocratic Oath, which I believe is one of the smartest things that's ever been written by man, and one of the top five written by shrimp, is that as long as everyone's okay, do no harm, you know, which I know it really isn't in, it's not written that way in Latin, but whatever, do no harm, then it's fine. You shouldn't want to walk. My life philosophy is don't use calories. And if I don't have to walk, why should I have to walk? Why should I do something walking that I could do without walking?
Sure, sure, sure. I'm not relitigating the walking argument.
It seems as though you are.
I'm posing the question of,
is there such thing as too much comfort?
Is it? Not, yeah.
Never.
Is it?
Where?
Is it
when?
Possible to be completely comfortable without sacrificing health?
Absolutely. Of course there is. You don't need that much exercise, first of all. You need
what about
which is what's very sad about you know, there's a lot of people that have genetic predisposals to obesity, and it's an incredibly complicated issue that I don't want to comment on. But what's incredibly sad about the normal human in terms of this idea of moving around and doing things is it takes very, very few amount. I believe it's 20 minutes of aerobic exercise a couple times a week keeps you within the normal range. That's the last time I had checked on it. That's a ridiculously low amount of exercise. That's an episode of Seinfeld without commercials. Okay, so you could take commercial breaks to look at the food that you're going to get after the episode of Seinfeld, and you would be pretty healthy. And again, I'm not a doctor, if that wasn't evident so far.
but even beyond like exercise, right? Beyond just like physical comfort. What about like emotional comfort? Sometimes you have to make decisions that are emotionally challenging, that are emotionally uncomfortable, that make you physically uncomfortable, but you have to do them to, you know, make yourself more comfortable in the future.
I would say via what I know about, you know, as well on my show, if you haven't heard it, we're sponsored by a mental health website. I am 1 in 4. I don't do that plug because they pay me enough. They don't pay me enough to do it. I do it because I'm in favor of it. That is a discomfortability you've allowed to come into your life. In the same way that we talk about, you know, something like your body feeling uncomfortable because you don't exercise it, or your body becoming uncomfortable because you don't eat right and you have uncomfortable bowel movements or whatever. You are uncomfortable with these psychological decisions because you haven't spent time analyzing them. I'm very in favor of preparation, but you're uncomfortable with these emotional decisions, not because they're, you know, totally uncomfortable, but because maybe you haven't gone through them in your head. In therapy, there are these things where you do mental exercises, which is, you know, preparing for something and allowing yourself to become more comfortable with it by the time it happens. You know, for example, if you're afraid of going outside, that's an uncomfortable, that's a, you know, a mental health problem as opposed to just regular mental health. But the more you do these exercises, the more comfortable you become with them. I am in favor of being prepared for all these comfort, you know, scenarios where you can be more comfortable in the moment. But of course, that is not necessarily the same as saying that too much. Obviously, if you were mentally ready to make these emotionally uncomfortable decisions, you would want to be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. If you could also be more comfortable with the decision, it wouldn't be bad.
Also, if I can interject.
Please do. I never shut up.
I think Keith actually disproved his own point, and it was a point that I was agreeing with until he said
it. Why did you let me talk this whole time? What am I doing?
He said something to the effect of putting yourself in an emotionally or socially uncomfortable position so that you can be more comfortable later. Well, then in that case, then you're actually quantifying your comfort as something that you're storing for later. So even if you're doing something that you think is altruistic or something that's for the greater good or whatever, in the end, it's really so that you are maximizing comfort somewhere else.
In my head, I was specifically thinking of like a breakup, right? No, sure. Nobody, unless you're a sociopath, nobody wants to break up with somebody because a breakup sucks. But sometimes you have to do it. You have to make yourself uncomfortable because you know it is the best thing for you and it is the best thing for that other person, right? And you know that to be comfortable in your life, you have to make this decision for yourself and this event has to occur. But you know that you have to make yourself uncomfortable. You have to do something that's very uncomfortable to get to that comfort in the future.
What was that second part there, Keith?
There's still a logical loop there because what is the alternative to not breaking up with that person? It means that you're ultimately going to be less comfort for the long term, whereas momentary discomfort of breaking up with them ensures that you're going to be more comfortable later.
That's the key word.
Sure.
More comfortable. So you want to be more comfortable. That's what you're saying, Keith. Keith, are you saying right now that you want to be more comfortable?
I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive for more comfort. My question was, is there such a thing? Do you think there's such a thing as, do you think it's possible to have too much comfort?
No, I really want to be dating all these horrible people that I have to break up with and worry that when I go to bed, they're going to stab me in my sleep. No, Keith, my dating life is great. That's exactly what I wanted from it. I hope I get no more comfort. I hope every person that I date is always secretly insane. No, no, no. I'm loving this. Of course you want more comfort. Of course there's no such thing as too much comfort. Of course when you talk to those people, like, there's all these anti-love movies that you see where it's like, true love's not a thing. It's like, yeah, well, have you ever met a couple that met when they were, like, in middle school and they're really happy for the rest of their lives? Because it's pretty fucking rad, and they're super-duper happy. So before you make these anti-love movies, realize that, like, yeah, that scenario's pretty dope. So, like, you can make fun of it all you want.
What about the scenario of the person that doesn't find love because they don't... Okay, what about the person that feels like they've found adequate comfort to themselves? Ah, fuck. No, that's bad. Never mind.
Okay, yeah. I think we have to abandon this.
But good match, sir. You did propose more arguments than Sir Deepu, and I applaud you for it. That was a little bit of a golf clap for everyone in here. That was quite a rowing debate. I enjoyed the idea.
And again, if you enjoyed this conversation and more conversations like it, check out Hack Thoughts. Let's Start a Cult podcast with Mike Fallick.
Love it.
Did you like that?
All right. Let's go ahead and talk about what we've been watching, what we've been consuming in our segment called Obey Consume. I'll go first. I started watching the X-Men TV show, Legion.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I've heard good things.
I was at a record store and didn't find anything in the music section, but I went and looked at their used Blu-rays. They had the first season for pretty cheap. So I just went ahead and grabbed it. Started watching it, I think about 3 or so episodes in. It's weird. And in a good way.
It looks like dog shit, man.
No, it's actually pretty good. Okay, I don't know if this is going to sell it. It will to Keith, but probably not to you. It reminds me of when Lost was good meets Twin Peaks meets some weird X-Men stuff. But it's really colorful. Okay. It's really
correct. That did turn me off entirely.
I see that actually did kind of pique my interest. So I've heard good things about it, and I actually really like the idea of the TV show because Legion was always such a weird property in the comics. I could see how it could work as like a solo standalone thing with elements of the X universe without like having to do a full fucking X-Men TV show. Well, with
I think the hook creatively, narratively, is that the show is all from the perspective of an unreliable narrator. So it's okay. You know, it's from the perspective of this hyper telepath who doesn't know he's a telepath. He thinks he's a schizophrenic. Everyone's telling him he is, and the show's broken up, so you're not sure if you're seeing a flashback, a telekinetic vision, or a dream, or what's going on. And so it has that kind of Lynchian feel to it. But it's also, like, Aubrey Plaza's in there doing really cool stuff that, you know, she's kind of a little off character. Definitely, I guess, kind of in her wheelhouse as far as being sort of an alternative, like, dark chick or whatever. But she's gets a little bit more to do. She's sort of menacing. And I like the production design. It has this kind of timeless, is this the 90s, is this the 60s kind of look to it. And it's really bright and colorful, which we've never really seen in the X-Men universe before because all the Bryan Singer movies are basically blue.
But that basically blue thing was in response to the fact that everything else before, like, I love those Bryan Singer X-Men. And for people that didn't grow up, you know, that was my formative years.
Oh,
that
I'm an apologist. Yeah. I think
that was an anti-Harry Potter. Really awesome. They're all great. They're all awesome. And so but the thing about it being like more colorful is if it's Legion, like for me, I'm a big X-Men fan, even though I really only read Wolverine. So for me, that's why I kind of liked, the movies because it is, you know, that's the tone of, yeah, it's really Wolverine-centric, and that is the color tone of Wolverine comics, except for his costume. Like, the color tone was always he was in dark places, and his color, quite frankly, stood out. I think even people would admit that. But for me, Legion was like the Laser City. It was just like X-Force was always like weird robot, if not robot-looking things, and then Legion was like Laser City. These are all the X-Men with laser shit, and just laser, laser, laser. And so you want to say it's a little bit more colorful. I want, like, Laser City. I want a ton of Kirby crackle. I want every, when I would open a thing of Legion, I would never buy them, but it was just like someone's eyes were glowing with Kirby crackle. Someone's hands were smoking on every single page. It was laser, yeah. laser. And I never had to buy them because I would just open them and be like, lasers, and then shut it, you know? And X-Force was the same with like robots. There was always shitloads of robots and cars and like all the X-Men with gear on them, with way too much fucking gear on them were in the X-Force stuff. And so, like, I'm not really sure where an okay, like, just for you to help me understand it, like, so it's not about my consumption thing, like The Flash. I don't like The Flash. I'm not going to watch the TV show. I don't like the superhero. But I understand how someone could be into the TV show because, like, there isn't that much Flash stuff. But, like, to do an X-Men thing that has okay effects when we have, like, really great, you can't say, even if you don't like the plots of some of these movies, the effects are incredible in all of them. And then we have also...
Wolverine Origins, they're pretty suspect.
But at least there was people getting their heads cut off. You know, that's all that movie was about, was the blood. But the point is that, like, you have so much X-Men stuff that gives you the full range of, like, both what you want. Like, there was the X-Men Evolution, which was another formative show for me. There was
That's why I think Legion...
What gap is it filling? That's what I'm asking. What gap is it filling?
This is the gap it's filling is this is the X-Men show for people who think they don't like the X-Men. And this is also the Legion property for people who almost uniformly have said, I didn't care for the comic, but this show's pretty rad. It's almost incidentally X-Men. It's very, in the same way that the Logan movie was kind of that way too. I called it a post superhero movie because its connection to the superhero origin stuff is only incidental.
And well deserved.
This is a lot more of a sort of psychedelic, weird, surreal mystery show that happens to take place in the X-Men universe, but very tangentially. That's what I started watching. It could suck. I'm only three episodes in. It could tank after this. And I will say there is some weird like Scientology stuff going on in the show that I don't know if it's intentional or not.
Well, we like might what? Get on that more next week.
What's what?
I don't know. Like if you watch it, I don't want to give stuff away. But if you watch it, there's some, especially like when it comes to like the. How the telepaths sort of like interview each other is very similar to like the e-reader meters and there's some weird stuff.
Can I say this is that's not that I think that might be a problem with just like the X-Men where we're getting our source material from. That might be someone doing the same thing that L. Ron Hubbard really successfully did do with sci-fi, which is to take modern science and turn it into cool shit. So it might just be another play on psychology.
That's why I'm saying I'm too short into the series to know if it's intentional or not. But they are playing on that whole kind of 60s nostalgia thing. So they could be talking about sort of that era of like pseudoscience like popping up. And I'm not sure like if these characters that are participating in this are good characters or bad characters yet. But I am digging the show. The other thing I watched, and I'll make this really, really quick. For the first time in my life, I rented something on YouTube. Rented as in paid to watch something on YouTube.
Sick! I've never done that either.
Because I couldn't find it anywhere else. For the life of me, I couldn't torrent it. But there's a documentary called It's Gonna Blow, and it's about the indie punk underground of San Diego from 86 to 96. You know, when the town was going through its kind of boom of that type of music, stuff that I'm super into. And it was good. It was really fascinating.
You should come out to my hometown of my home state of New Jersey, and specifically the guys that do the theme song, Freddy Unreal and the Turnbucklers, live in, New Brunswick, where there is thriving punk rock scene.
And has been for a long time. Yeah.
For a long time. And those basement shows never stopped. And it is a trip. Sometimes it's not a great trip. But that's the thing that people don't talk about with punk rock is that
New Jersey is a hotbed for basement shows. Yeah.
Yeah. You should go out. It's a fun time if you're into punk rock. You'll meet weirdos like me. That's where you find a me.
Keith, what have you been obeying or consuming?
I actually had a few answers. I've been trying to like save stuff up for this segment specifically, but all of that is going to the wayside because of something I discovered today.
What?
There is this newscaster named, he's a weatherman for KUSI News, named Dave Scott. Maybe
where's
it's Dave.
KISU or what did you just
say? KUSI, local news, San Diego News.
Okay.
And he has this video that was, it is at the top of the subreddit for cringe Vizios. And it is so fucking funny. Now, here's the thing. You're going to watch this video once. And you're going to say, that wasn't that funny. And then you're going to watch it again because you're going to be like, okay, I have to know what was funny about this. Mm-hmm. And then you watch it again and you know, you notice so much more. And it is one of those YouTube videos that literally gets better every time you see it. So he is this sort of a bumbling local weatherman who like tries to be funny and interject humor into all of his like, remote segments and stuff. And he's doing this fucking segment for this inflatable, relay, right? So it's like a relay, but it takes place on like, inflatable toys. So, you know, it's for kids and all that stuff. And he sets the segment up and he's like, when you think of inflation, what do you think of? And the newscaster is like, what are you talking about? That could mean a lot of things. And he's like, okay. He was really trying to lead the anchor. The anchor doesn't take it. So then he's like, is inflation, when you think of inflation, is it a good thing or a bad thing? And the anchor's like, I mean, if you're talking about, and the anchor is trying to keep him on fucking topic because he knows why he's on that remote and he's not buying into his fucking bullshit. And he's just like, well, if you're talking about like an inflatable boat, it's a great thing. And the newscaster is just like, and Dave Scott's like, yeah, it is a good thing if you're talking about inflatable stuff like this. And then he goes and he interviews the people that are there for the event who were not expecting to be interviewed at all and don't answer his questions because they're weird and confusing. And then the best thing is there's this guy in this wacky arm inflatable man suit that he made.
Inflatable arm flailing tube man, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a costume that he made out of, looks like a collapsible laundry hamper or something, right? But he's clearly like
clever
spokesperson, and he's hiding in the back waiting for like the signal to come out and get interviewed. And the newscaster, Dave Scott, is teasing it out so fucking much. And at a certain point, he's like, all right, well, there's got to be something else here. There's got to be, so let's all say the magic words. The crowd behind him is visibly confused as fuck. Like, what are you talking about, you insane asshole? And he goes, he says, 1, 2, 3, abracadabra, 1, 2, 3, look around, and what do you see? And everyone is like, oh, was that the cue? Was that it? He clearly did not pre-plan this at all. He wasn't like, okay, when I say this, you're going to pop out. Because the guy, like, pops out beforehand, gets really awkward, and hides again.
Oh, my God.
And then he interviews him, and this guy, like, tries.
What's the news?
It is the most awkward newscast I've ever seen. And then I found out that every fucking newscast he does is like this. So I went down a rabbit hole on YouTube just Googling Dave Scott KUSI videos, and they are magical.
Now, I don't want to burst your bubble here, but what if that's his brand? Like, what if he had like one or two bad days doing this, and he's like,
here's the
this
thing.
This is viral.
You're
so
accusing this local guy of being like Tim and Eric level genius?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no way he's that smart. He's
the best character comedian I have ever seen in my life.
You're saying he essentially acts Stanley as Andy Kaufman. There's no way he knows what he's doing. There's no way at all.
Watching this inspired me. I was like, there's no way I could do a fucking character this good ever in my life. It is so pure and honest and awkward as fuck. Highly recommend going down the rabbit hole of Dave Scott KUSI videos.
All right. Mike, what have you been obeying or consuming?
I've been very video game oriented lately. So I've been watching a lot of AVGN, Angry Video Game Nerd. I've been watching just all the backlogs of it. I had no idea he did so many, which is, it's upsetting to me. You know, this is an old internet thing, and watching other channels he did. I caught up. I don't know if you guys have ever watched Red versus Blue.
Sure. Yeah.
And so now they have a new season that just came out. And so I watched that too. I'm always a big fan of those things. And I just think it's, you know, I think it's so basic, and I'm so for originality. And, you know, I'm outspoken against people that sort of use other people's products. But at the same time, I am a conundrum that I've been watching these almost nonstop. But to say that I'm really watching them is sort of a misnomer, because of course these are all old things I've seen. I've been playing a lot of Castlevania 3, and Castlevania 1 on the Nintendo DS, the store. Cause I don't know if you guys know this, but like all the stores for Nintendo are shutting down. So I'm trying to buy all these games on the digital networks. The Wii store is shut down completely. And so I bought all the day of and the weeks before, I bought as many games as I could afford on the digital network for the Wii. And I've been buying up old classic games on the Nintendo 3DS as well. And Castlevania 1, which is... if you're out there right now and you beat fucking Castlevania, the original one, on the Nintendo 3DS, there's no way. I guarantee no one has ever beaten Death on that level, because I've seen other people play Death. There's this character named the Grim Reaper, or Death, as he's actually called in the game, and he has these sickles that apparate, and I've seen people play it on the original system, the NES, and it's way less hard than it is on the 3DS. If you've actually beaten it on the Nintendo 3DS, you find me, because there's no way you have. So that's really all I've been doing, is if you live next door to me, all you've heard the past months is just, oh, fuck, this is impossible, for like the past month, and just screaming. So I have been watching those other things. I have, you know, I actually was very grateful for our Netflix homework, because I was like, I'm just going to watch a thing right now, because the last thing I actually watched fully is about a month ago. I bought one of the collections of the Julia Childs DVDs, which are so good. She is, it's just so calming and amazing and educational. She's so, like this person, what's your name? Ted Shitface? What's the newscaster?
Oh, David Scott.
Yeah, she is such a genuine person that there's an entertainment value to her being both professional and genuine as an entertainer, and that was great. But since then, it's just been Castlevania 1 and 3.
Let's go ahead. Me and Keith, we're going to talk about Solo. We're going to give a general review. Try not to give spoilers. Not really a ton to give.
There's a couple, like, little things, but...
stuff happens, but yeah.
Nothing. Oh my god, does Darth Vader die?
Go ahead and tell me what happens in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
So we're introduced to Han Solo. He's this young Oliver Twist orphan character who's escaping from this garbage planet. He's escaping from Fagin, the space centipede, basically, with this girl, Emilia Clarke's character, Kira. Mm-hmm. Through shenanigans, they get separated at a checkpoint. She gets left behind. He ends up being forced to... huh?
How old
is
she?
Young. He's like a young kid. I don't know.
23 or something.
I think he was supposed to be younger than that, even. I think he's like 16.
Well, there's a few time jumps in the movie.
Yeah, anyway.
He's in this Boy Scout uniform. He's about 16 years old. He's in a cave, right?
Yeah. he makes it off-world by enlisting in the Empire. He's...
when does he get the hat?
God damn it, Mike. We have a whole review to get through.
All I'm saying is that is literally Temple. That is literally whatchamacallit, the third Indiana Jones.
It's literally Oliver Twist.
I mean, yeah, but you're talking about a young kid. Okay, sorry. Go on.
Anyway, so he gets off world. He meets up with some smugglers who he'd rather join their cause than be enlisted with the Empire. He's a runaway. He's a turncoat. Oh, that was a Game of Thrones reference. Shame on me. And He decides that the smuggling life is for him. They get involved in a job that is a little more complicated than they expect. And then they end up indebted to this gangster named Dryden Voss, who later, the most of the plot of the movie is about how they're going to pay this guy back. They end up in another.
What species is dry and ready and fold and clean and starched?
He is strange, veiny face. I don't know.
He is like the Paul Bettany. He is Paul Bettany, and his thing is that like it looks like they're either scars or they might be part of his race. It's never really explained. But when
oh my god, a galaxy far, far away, and a guy with acne. It sounds
It's like scars. It's like
it looks like he was probably attacked.
You didn't say they were scars. I've never seen scars on Earth. Thank God we went halfway across the universe.
Have you seen him glow red when somebody gets pissed off?
Oh, you didn't tell me he blushes. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. A galaxy far, far away for the blushing burn victim. This is the best movie ever.
Okay, you didn't even see this one, Mike.
But there's no alien. I'm gonna keep asking where the alien is.
He's an alien. He's definitely an alien.
Kind of an alien.
There's like a little six-armed alien dude.
Okay, there we go. Now we're talking.
There's a big lizard thing. There's some aliens.
There's a few bars that are very similar to the one in Tatooine where we have, like, you know, aliens to be at. And of course, we run into eventually, Chewbacca.
Oh,
who
yeah.
The
whole crew. So they have to pay this gangster back. Shenanigans happen. Solo. A Star Wars story.
Goron, Lizard, and I assume Sub-Zero shows up at a certain point, and Indiana Jones get into some debt, and then that's it.
You think Indian in the cupboard?
I'm thinking of Indian in the cupboard and Mortal Kombat. All wrapped together.
It is surprising there's never been a Sub-Zero specific movie, but I'm going to say, I thought this was fun. It's not a lot more than that. It is, I think I said in my written review, it doesn't move the needle very much as far as Star Wars lore. It's not rewriting history. But I think that its heart is in the right place. The set pieces are fun. I like a good heist.
Yeah,
there's three of them. There's a heist, a prison escape sequence. All
and
of
Han
that
Solo,
really well.
Han Solo kills hundreds of people, right?
Oh, he kills a few.
He kills a couple. Not as many as you would think. I think there's a good foil.
So then everyone who doesn't like, you know, Han shot first, everyone who is a Han shot first person hates this movie, right?
No.
No.
Why?
I think
he's supposed to be a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah. There's actually kind of a moment that nods to that, which brings me to my point about the movie. I liked this standalone a lot more than Rogue One, which is not a standalone. It's a footnote.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
To me, this is a lot more of a standalone, except when in this mostly happens in like the first 20 minutes.
Right.
And this is my big criticism of the movie, is all of the action stops for a moment. And Alden Ehrenreich looks right at the camera and says, you know, like Star Wars, and winks.
No, he doesn't.
No, but basically, there are some moments that are like.
I was going to say, I don't remember that, but.
They are so far gone, I believed you full heartedly. I was like, oh, I guess
can't
we're
believe
there
all
at this
these
point.
Star Wars we're having.
That's what did bother me is there are a bunch of Easter eggs and they are very Easter eggy. Like, there is literally a moment, when Han Solo looks at Chewbacca, learns Chewbacca's name, and says, well, I'm not going to call you that. I'm going to have to call you something else. Yeah, alluding to the fact that in the later movies, he calls him Chewie. There's little moments like that.
He does within this movie.
Excuse me, how does this moment happen?
Very unorganically.
Yeah.
Because assuming that Chewbacca says his fucking name in Wookiee language, and I've never heard Chewbacca go, Chewbacca. Assumingly, he goes, And then Han Solo, playing with the bit that they've done, which now they're so far gone from, says, Chewbacca? Well, you're already translating his stupid, dumb dog name into English bastardized words. So the idea, is that what happens, is that Chewbacca growls at him, and then he says, I'm not calling you Chewbacca? Already talking to a dog who speaks dog language, and he refuses to call him his weird dog name that he's translated into fucking English words? Is that what I'm
probably
really supposed to believe?
Tell Mike about the part where Han Solo speaks Chewie language?
Everything is wrong in the world. Let me just say, there's a small chance that Mike Fallick went into a coma many years ago, and everything's just wrong. And I'm going to wake up, and they'll be like, no, DC movies, it's all 300, and Watchmen, it's still great, and it's Batman, and it's all dark, and people die, and it's awesome. And, oh yeah, Marvel movies are all Spider-Man, and they're like, I'm guessing I probably got hit in the head right after I left Spider-Man 2, and I imagine the third Spider-Man, and everything since then, since after Watchmen and 300 has all been some sort of side effect of my brain not having enough oxygen, because the idea that you had that you had Han Solo going, something's wrong. Everything's wrong.
Well, this is actually directed by Ron Howard, who I thought was actually an appropriate fit given that his work with the Lucasfilm on Solo. And I think that actually of all of the new modern directors, and I include J.J. Abrams in this as well, So I think Ron Howard actually fits in this milieu pretty well. I think he's well aware of the world that Lucasfilm, because he was there working with Lucas during this time. So I think he can actually kind of slot into that tone in a way that doesn't feel referential, but actually feels, with experience and knowledge.
And those moments I was talking about, they bothered me, but they were pretty few and far between. And for the most,
I kind of expected it, and I think that those moments also come from the fact that there's a little bit of a creative snake eating its own tail situation here, because I think we're feeling the influence of Star Wars on Guardians of the Galaxy and Firefly coming back around again on this property.
I actually wondered if I was actually going to bring that up. Do you think that the fact that Firefly exists sort of might have influenced the audience's perception of this movie in a world where
you're talking about something that most nobody's seen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a very devoted fan base for Firefly.
Yeah, I feel like the Venn diagram of people who like Firefly and people who like Star Wars isn't that separated.
Of course,
it is that separated.
Certainly Firefly fan is a Star Wars fan.
Correct.
But
do you think that those are the same Star Wars fans that were really upset by this movie?
Numbers wise it makes sense. I don't know what it is, but numbers wise it does make sense.
I think
in a world where Firefly and Serenity don't exist, and this movie does exist, if that happened,
dampened it a little bit. I think the fact that this movie did not do very well is really interesting, and I think it's twofold. I think there's two reasons. I think one reason is, and this might be the last time we ever say this in the history of film, but Alden Ehrenreich isn't a star. He's really good. I think he's a great actor. I've been watching him for a long time. I was excited for him to get this part, and I thought, like, Star Wars doesn't need stars. They never had them before, but it looks like with this movie, when you're talking about somebody who's been played by Harrison Ford forever,
I think
when people are like, who the hell is this kid? It's like, oh, well, he was in this Francis Ford Coppola movie 7 years ago that I liked called Tetro.
He played Hobie Doyle in Hail Caesar.
Yeah, another movie nobody saw.
I liked
that movie, and I liked him in that movie, and I knew that would be a good launching pad.
Did you not like him in this, or do you just think?
I thought he was fine. I actually don't think that he's a bad fit for the role. It doesn't feel like the same performance as Harrison Ford. It's definitely a different take, but I think a very valid one. But it does, I mean, this is basically Star Wars Muppet Babies.
Yeah.
Second reference to Muppet Babies in my life this week, and it's so odd that you also reference Muppet Babies. We are cut from the same cloth. Oh, that's so weird.
I actually liked Alden as Han Solo.
Yeah, I
thought...
But I think that a lot of people didn't go to this movie because they didn't know who he was, and they're like, who the fuck is this person who's not Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
And then the other thing, and I think Mike can attest to this, I think despite the fact that we liked Last Jedi, a lot of people didn't, and it seems like that trend is only increasing as time goes by, and I mean, hardly fucking anybody liked Rogue One. So
no, you're very wrong on that.
It has a weird, like,
no. I've talked to so many people that the consensus of people that I know who, mm-hmm. like, Rogue One is one of their favorite Star Wars
movies. Wrong people?
The wrong I'm people, just, I agree.
I know those people are the who like Rogue One too, but
Cassidy,
I don't get it.
I am here. If you're going to make a conviction, we can shout at Keith to convince him those are the wrong people. Please stand by your convictions of those are the wrong people. That
most
like
people,
it's a very bad movie. If it wasn't called Star Wars, no one would even think about it. No one would even think about that stupid, terrible movie if the word Star Wars wasn't in it. It is a bad movie about a Verizon installation that takes 2.5 fucking sucking hours of your life for these people to plug in a modem. That is the entire movie. You're aware of that.
That's the only Star Wars movie, even like the really disagreeable prequels. There are a few moments in Rogue One where I literally was falling asleep.
So since we're on the subject of Rogue One, I feel like Rogue One needed to be more like Solo.
Sure.
So Solo, I kind of liked it because...
Who is Rogue One for? Before we get to Solo, who is Rogue One for?
I have
honestly,
no idea.
Who is it for?
Gareth Edwards. That's who.
I don't know who even that is. Who is that
He's
guy?
He's a guy who poorly directed it.
Okay.
And all of his movies are like that. And he did the remake of Godzilla, which I also didn't like for almost the exact same reasons. They're just stately and boring, and he doesn't understand the appeal of the genre he's working in. I don't want to relitigate Rogue One, but I thought that it was pretty terrible. And then...
Oh, but it's a framing for this movie is why I bring it up. That's the only reason
I want to interrupt it is because if
Rogue One is for older Star Wars fans, if it's for us to fill in these gaps, that line, since I was a kid, many Bothams died to get this information, has haunted me. It is one of the most haunting lines in movie history. And you can only imagine, it is a bit like, it's one of the horror lines of the movie, is that this event that happens is so gruesome and deadly that she is in a room of rebel soldiers, poor, starving, dying rebel soldiers, and she won't recount what happens to these to get that information, right? Oh. So that's got to be goddamn hardcore. So if it's for me who remembers that scene, it wasn't that. If it's for kids, which is what George Lucas has said the movie is for, it's not for them either because it has no sense of fun or adventure or enjoyment or mystery. So who the fuck is Rogue One for? Which is why I want to bring this up, because who the fuck is Solo for? Is it for me because I remember Han Solo, or is it just a new way to remind kids about a character who won't be in the next movie because he's sucking dead? Who is the movie for? What is the release date about? Surely the time to release this was like 4 years ago before any of these came out. If it's for kids, if it's for me, well, then it should be this hardcore, gritty, better than Firefly movie. That's like, he's this hard-boiled kid who's hilarious, and him and Chewbacca should be slaying pussy left and right. It should be this awesome movie for adults. It should be R-rated, where Chewbacca comes out of a room covered, because he's been going down on some Chewbacca big-titted woman, covered in hair, and he comes out of a room after Han Solo and Lando Calrissian are snorting space cocaine, and they're like, oh shit, Chewbacca just killed that girl in the other room. It should be The Hangover, but with Chewbacca, Lando Calrissian, and Han Solo. Because otherwise, who the fuck is this movie for?
It's not that.
Not for that.
No.
Then who can? A kid doesn't care about Han Solo. That old guy that died in the first movie? That's what they're going to say. That old man who died in the first movie, he's not even sexy to kids anymore. At least when he was kind of an old man, even for the first movies, he was sexy to young boys
and
girls.
Mike, I'm gonna interrupt you for a second. I'm gonna go ahead and say, I don't necessarily care what people's expectations are. Like, I don't care about pleasing Star Wars fans. I don't care. What I care about. Well, what I care about when I'm watching these movies is like, is it a good movie? Is it entertaining? And can it stand on its own two legs? For the most part, I think Solo does. Whereas I don't think Rogue One does. I think Rogue One is, I didn't hate it as much as Cassidy, but I do think it is, kind of bland.
Miserable.
And whereas Solo, I feel like is a pretty fun space, adventure.
I think if you like that, if you like the first 20 minutes or 25 minutes of Return of the Jedi, which I do, there's a lot of that in this movie. It embraces sort of the space western qualities. There's even, you know, gun duels and these like Sergio Leone shots. I think Woody Harrelson is a really good foil for Alden Ehrenreich. I think he's actually kind of the movie's secret weapon as far as characters and acting goes.
I also think Emilia Clarke was great. I actually think the supporting cast.
That's a character that didn't need to be. Like, that's a character that you traditionally would have just been a damsel in distress. But
she's a smoking hot space badass.
And a little bit of a femme fatale at times. And she's got a lot going on with her. I'll tell you what. This movie has a lot of... this movie has a lot of Howard Hawks influence. Mm-hmm. As far as a movie about men and their relationship to sort of dubious women and the competitions of masculinity.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Also, they make fun of Lando's space capes, which I found very...
Which I agreed. And I liked Donald Glover in the part. I think that they kind of turn him a little bit into a meme. And I think that he could potentially be more interesting than that. I've never been, like, the biggest Donald Glover fan as an actor.
I think it toes a line. I think it was, like, one cape joke away from that. But I think it held back enough that it didn't totally sell out the character, if that makes sense.
I like the poker sequences. I thought that was really fun. And the movie actually, unlike a lot of big, loud action movies these days, even some of the Star Wars ones, there's a lot of character moments. And even when they're doing a set piece, they're informed by characters. So I think this movie is doing what it's supposed to be doing, but it's not bringing people into the theater.
I think it was marketed poorly. I think it came out at the wrong time.
Was it marketed at all? That's my question. I saw very
few really. No. Yeah. No. Yeah. It almost felt like they were kind of intentionally tanking it. Almost like they were like testing the waters to see like, can a Star Wars movie fail? the answer was yeah, kind of.
I guess so.
Release date shifted ever? I have a very special guest, which would be Ron Howard being mired in controversy over his main actor in his most famous production of Arrested Development being accused of sexual assault. I'd say that's a pretty good reason for the Disney Corporation to move his movie to a crappy, out-of-the-way time slot in between summer and winter.
If you look at the release dates of like the Marvel movies, they do a very similar thing where they'll have one come out sort of around the late spring, early or sometimes like February. February through March or something like that, and then they'll have another one come out in the summer. Then they'll have another one come out in the fall.
Do you think this was sort of the testing ground to see if they could release more Star Wars?
Because
they've released one every Christmas. So, like, this last Christmas was The Last Jedi. It was the year before that Christmas was Rogue One. The year before that Christmas was The Force Awakens. This is the first summer movie since they've relaunched and rebranded Star Wars. That's what I wonder. To me, it kind of feels like with the sort of relatively low stakes of this movie, it feels like a testing ground. Like, they're like...
But it's such a big character, and this is, like, if you talk to people...
Yeah,
like,
oh, open, no, no,
I opened my review.
He is, but he isn't. I mean, he...
I opened my review saying that people watch Star Wars for two reasons. And that's Darth Vader or Han Solo.
I'm trying to figure out, because I vaguely recall somebody... I'm trying to look it up now, because I know when Solo came out, somebody accused Disney of sabotaging them.
Before the weekend numbers came in?
Yes. That before the weekend, I'm not going to be able to find it now, but this may be even more complicated and more Hollywood than we know, because I'm now vaguely recalling something else coming out that week that, and the director accused, publicly accused Disney of sabotaging his release week. And I can't find anything now because honestly, Googling it is so, God, people write too much about everything. And so
that happens frequently. And Disney has been known to be kind of bullish about their release dates. And
they've done it before. So I
that
think
kind of stuff.
I think we're missing something.
Could be some karma there.
My point is this about Star Wars, and this was the crux of our fight online, Keith. And fight discussion, I only talk to people that I value their opinion of, so everything we say is all interesting to me. But for me, why I defend the prequels, and why I will always defend the prequels, is because when you listen to the interviews, and when you watch the behind-the-scenes footage, they are always trying to do something that is cinematically impossible. In every single movie, George Lucas took that chance. Even Jar Jar Binks, who people don't like, forget that it was the first fully CGI character in movie history, an accomplishment that should not be diminished in any way, despite what you think about the character. At the same point, no one ever says about the character, I didn't believe he was in the scene. And that is a cinematic masterpiece. Phantom Menace additionally has the most CGI characters on scene out of any movie in movie history until that point. And he goes on to try and do these things, in addition to the sound design being out of this world for all of these movies. The point is, when I go see a Star Wars, I don't expect it to be the best movie I see. I don't. I laughed, despite Revenge of the Sith being one of my favorite Star Wars movies because of the action. I laughed at certain parts of it because it was bad. The point of the movie is to try your absolute hardest to push limits. And that has always been his intention, is to push limits. That's how Star Wars was able to birth ILM, which has made every single movie effect possible because George Lucas refused to not figure out how to make the CGI magic happen. And when I say magic, I don't mean movie magic like the way Disney milks it. And this is part of the problem here, is that, you know, ooh, the magic of Bambi. Well, Bambi's not that magical. It's a good movie. You're drawing some deer. It's not movie magic. My whole point about all these movies is you should go to Star Wars and say, good on you for trying to do something so different. That's what Star Wars has always been. And that's why I stopped seeing them. That's why I've been boycotting Disney films. It just isn't that. They just don't care enough. And it's they want
to. Do you count Marvel in your Disney boycott?
Yeah. I haven't seen
Marvel has really been challenging themselves with like Thor Ragnarok and Infinity War. I feel like they've, you know, there's still definitely a formula to it, but they're definitely pushing what they can do with the formula. So Solo, a Star Wars story, I'll say a B minus.
I gave it a B, just a flat B. It's good. It's fine. Sorry, Jabber fans. I regret to inform you that we ran into a bunch of technical difficulties towards the end of our Star Wars review. Skype, old computers, bad combination. We dropped one of the calls, tried to get Keith back on, wasn't happening. Tried to review Train to Busan 3 or 4 times, didn't happen. So we are going to call that an episode, and if you want to listen to our opinions on Train to Busan, we're still going to cover that on the next episode for the Netflix homework. We did get a little bit of a hot take from Mike about Train to Busan because he did watch it. So we'll play that on the show. But I want to thank Mike Fallick for coming on and discussing all the things that we talked about today. Go ahead and check out his podcast, Hack Thought, be sure to check us out on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, the Windows Podcast Network, and Google Play, Jabber and the Drone. You can also find us on Twitter at Jabber Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Jabber Podcast. You can find the podcast on Facebook at Facebook.com/Jabber Podcast. Keith is available. Go to his website, KeithFosterKid.com, where he has all of his show dates and all of his comedy stuff. We're going to call that it. We'll see you next week.